Welcome back to another episode of the NXT Roundtable for the Developmental Podcast. This is episode number 28. Yes, 28. Yes, thank you. Innes is not here with us once again. He was back for a hot minute and then was gone immediately. Liam Stewart still joins me. Liam, how are you?
Yeah, I'm great. I'm excited to be back for another week to talk about NXT. We had full year this weekend, so Innes has been covering that on the socials, so he's having a well-earned rest from not having to watch another two-hour wrestling show. I mean, I watched full year as well, but I didn't watch SmackDown, so I guess the balance is out. But instead, he's covering me at work just now so that I can give the podcast my full attention and edit and upload it right after this so that it's done and out of the way before this week's episode.
What work would that be, Liam? Would that be for ITRWrestling.com by any chance?
Yeah, that would be for their Twitter, which today started with me tweeting Chris Jericho and getting retweeted and 300 likes, so it's been a good start. Happy birthday, Chris. It's interesting on that, because the comments are 50-50, because I was like, what's been your favourite moment in the 30-year career of the greatest of all time, Chris Jericho? Mm-hmm. And it's a mix of people being like, the list of 1,000 holds, the Festival of Friendship, you just made the list, donating $3,000 to Trump, being a COVID denier. Like, it kind of goes in that, and I have to very carefully click where I like. But on the topic of birthdays, it's been a very special week. It's been both of our birthdays.
Yeah, our birthdays fall within about 4 days of each other, which is, you know,
convenient.
Very, very convenient. We can really, that way we don't have to do more than one birthday podcast, I guess. But yeah, I turned a disgustingly old age, and it was, for the most part, pretty good. And I got a big-ass delivery from you guys that contained the likes of baked beans, pasta. What else is in there? The Bella Twins book, which was actually a nice gift. Another nice gift was like a replica, like a Quidditch set, which was kind of cool. A ukulele for some reason. A MAGA hat. And
for the British viewers, he means like Make America Great Again, not Magaluf.
Yeah,
he's not off to Shagaluf. No, not at all.
I can't think of anything else that was in there, but it was a mixed bag, and I've already put the baked beans and pasta to use, not in the same dish because holy shit, but like, they're chipping away at it because there was a lot.
I stayed with one of my vegan friends in high school for maybe a couple of weeks, maybe in a month or so. And I tried to be, I mean, one, they weren't exactly going to sit and cook me a steak.
No.
But also I tried to just be respectful and not bring non-vegan products, or at least non-vegetarian products into the house. And it was over that sort of month period. There was a lot, not like nut cutlet and beans, which to be fair, was actually all right. But one time we did have spaghetti and beans. Not for me.
That doesn't go together. They are they're two separate meals.
In terms of worst cooking things ever, me and my mum used to do like every day on a Wednesday we'd cook together, and we made some really nice stuff. Like, we made a really nice panko breadcrumb mac and cheese, a really nice sausage casserole. But one time we just decided to say fuck it, and we put peas inside a lasagna, because our logic was like, you have peas with a lasagna. So why not have it inside them? Don't do it.
Because then the peas would then cook and then infuse themselves in the lasagna when, yeah, not a good idea.
Yeah, no. Kind of put me off peas. Same way that I've only, as I sit here with a, to be fair, this isn't a coffee, I've got a almond milk and hazelnut syrup chai latte from Starbucks here.
Oh!
But it took me about, how long was I, 24, it took me about 22 years to like coffee. Because once when I was about 12, me and my mum were having a pizza, like a takeaway pizza, and watching one of the Harry Potter films in my bedroom. And there was, we didn't have any juice, so we had forgot to order any. But on the desk was a cup of this like pitch black liquid that looked like Coke. And I go to my mum, oh, is that Coke? Can I have some? And she goes, yeah, there was just a little bit, but you can have it. So I take this big gulp. It was black coffee. and it scarred me from coffee for the rest of my life because it would rank. Whereas now, I like coffee, so, you know.
There we go. We got there. And for your birthday, you got a... You got part one of a delivery from me. There is more to come, but, like, you got
I have used the chicken salt. I used it yesterday as well. I am... Because I've been off work for a week and also had the sort of... I say midlife crisis of wanting to do more adventure things. I bought an Apple Watch.
Yeah, right.
And because I bought an Apple Watch, I kind of want to do stuff like walk and things because it tracks it. I mean, I, who has one as well, are in a little competition. So I walked 15K on my birthday by myself. Yeah. So I was going to my mum's. So rather than get the bus for half an hour, I walked. And then on the way back, I came via a hill. Like, so went around the hill. Saw some wild kangaroos, which was nice. And then the hills go over the zoo.
Oh, right. Okay, I was like, how the hell did they get there? Got it.
Yeah, Trump sent them, you know. But no, and then got a wee bit lost, was on the phone to die while I was doing it, sat and had a nice little bite to eat on one of the rocks, and then came home. Yesterday I did 5K just walking around, and today when I find some time I'm going to do it. So I've been doing that, but as part of that health kick I've been cooking again, because I really like cooking. But I barely have the time. So yesterday I made red onion mash with a marinated butterfly chicken breast.
Ooh.
And some roast peppers. So I put some. I made like a marinade paste, oil, paprika, hot chili powder, some chicken salt, some different things. Rubbed that over. Left it for 4 hours. Got one of them left. It was really nice. The chicken salt just adds that little bit different to normal salt.
It is hard to describe chicken salt because for some reason it's a very Australian thing in that it's only here. But it's for anyone who doesn't know, because for some reason we have a lot of listeners in Canada. Hello, Canada.
I'm going to alienate them. I support the Ottawa Senators. They are my NHL team. There we are. Sorry, Maple Leafs fans.
Okay. But chicken salt in Australia, it is the salt of choice if you are having, like, chips. And if you are or fries. I think Canada still calls them fries. Chicken salt is, instead of going normal salt, it's chicken salt because it adds like a slightly different, like a tangier kind of flavor. It is hard to describe. It's like chicken seasoning, but it's salt. It's really fucking good.
And it, much to the name, is not salt made of chicken, but instead salt, I think, goes well with chicken. It tastes a little bit like KFC breadcrumbs.
Because they've
got similar crossover. But in a development from last week's podcast where Innes and Di got me those really nice gifts of AirPods, turns out to be the worst gift of mankind because they don't work. So they've got one of the connection issues that have happened with the latest iOS update where they literally won't enter pairing mode because of something with the connectors. So I need to go into the Apple shop and they'll sort it, but it might cost me like £30. But even then, still cheaper AirPods.
Again, the upside, at least the dog didn't eat them again, so that's something.
Yeah. Well, the dog has, as we were discussing just before we came on, has pulled the entire duvet off of the bed that I just made and is lying on the floor in it. It's cute, so she gets away with it. But
I was going to say, this sounds like a very cute thing to do. I'm house-sitting at the moment, so I'm looking after two dogs and they are very high. They're big dogs. Like they're not like little tiny little chihuahuas. They're like energetic. They require attention and stuff. So I've got them for a week. This is going to be interesting.
That's the sort of dog that's great where if you drive or if you live somewhere like where Di does, where you've got the mountains, or even my dad who's up north in Scotland, you literally, up until recently, he had two dogs. He had the beagle that we still have and then the black lab that passed away recently. And the two of them, he could just let off the lead in a place called the Abbey, which is like a sort of grassy area around some old ruiny stuff. And they just run and they tire themselves out. Whereas the advantage with Mia is that although she requires lots of attention and like tiring out because she's part Jack Russell, so she's got energy for days, I can still outrun her just now. So she has to keep up with me because she's got small legs. So we went on a jog yesterday in the rain, which was fun. she liked me when we went on the walk. She didn't like me when we came back.
Yeah, this is I'm because I've never owned a dog in my life. I've only ever had cats and stuff. Because my god, do they just look after themselves? whereas dogs, they're very different. So I am getting used to it. They're going to be fun, but like I'm also where I'm staying at the moment, where I'm house sitting, is across the road from the beach. So I can just take them across, well, like navigate traffic for a moment. That's the most stressful I've ever been in my life, having to look after two dogs on the same lead. They're big dogs, really. Like when we started walking originally, they were dragging me along, and I was like, kind of like digging my heels. Like, guys, please stop! Holy crap! And they don't slow down.
See that stress of danger for animals. You do not get used to it. Like, we're top floor in the flat, but we did up our. We have a little balcony in the living room that goes outside, and we did it up with like artificial grass. We've got some chairs out there, so like when it's not raining, or if it's like during the summer when it's hot, we can like go out and like sunbathe, or even when it's like fine weather, like you can just sit outside for a bit. But it also means the dog can go out and do the toilet on the artificial grass without having to go all the way down the stairs. We've got a little like bell that she rings with her nose when she wants to go out, and I can't use it with her because I get terrified she is somehow going to get over the balcony and fall.
Yeah.
I have like absolute new parent stress of like everything is thing, but only with that. But I think that's because I'm scared of heights, and I imagine that if I was her height, that's really tall, and I'm like, nope, not going to happen. But no, she's good. She cuddles me while I watch NXT, which is nice, until she starts trying to walk over the keyboard. And all of a sudden, instead of Ember Moon, I've written Ember Baboon and things like that. It's not great.
Imagine if you accidentally said that. You would have such the media shitstorm of Liam Stewart, racist, on NXT review.
Shit, didn't mean it. The dog's racist.
The dog Liam, did the it.
The dog just sat there in a Make America Great Again hat. Oh, I suppose we should touch on that. The elections happened.
Yeah, but Biden's like the entire...
won for now.
Yeah, the entire election happened since we were last on, and yeah, it was a fucking roller coaster for a minute there. Day one, it looked like it was going to end in disaster, and then slowly but surely, very slowly, things started to turn, and then basically, more or less, Biden has won, and we're just awaiting all the formalities and shit to happen, but America's going to be okay for 4 years, or allegedly. I mean, they've got a long fucking way to go, but like, good start. So congratulations to America.
I think Innes is glad that I made him cash out for that £30, because Innes put £10 on Trump to win.
Yeah.
And at one point it looked like all the bookies started changing Trump to their favourite, so I cashed out for him. I then put that £30 on black and it didn't come in, but because I was nice, I gave him the £30. And then I put my £30 on black again and it came in, so I didn't lose anything anyway. But yeah, that way Innes and his first bet won, and Trump's not in office, so it's kind of a win-win all round.
It is. It really is.
He apparently wants to come and spend some time in Scotland on his golf course, so no, that can get too
far. I was just thinking about it recently, because like, when Biden moves in, they are going to need to, like, I mean, like, I'm sure they would have cleaned and stuff anyway, but, like, they're going to need to deep, deep clean to the point where I don't think Biden's going to be able to use the White House, or at least the West Wing, for several days, because that place is riddled in COVID. So he's gonna
someone played a Fozzy concert in there.
He's got another birthday boy. Biden's gonna move in and just be like, cool, well, we've got to move out while the place gets fumigated for a little bit, and then they'll come back in. But no, it's very good news. I watched the Biden and Harris, like, basically, you know, victory speech that they had the other day, and it was so nice. Like, I'd forgotten what an actual leader sounds like.
Sounds like, when not every line that he's saying makes you want to, like, fear for your life. It was when he was at one of the others, but he was talking about, like, what sort of the character of Obama,
mm-hmm.
and, like, the nicest moment he shared with Obama. And he talked about the fact that, when is it Bo? Is that how you pronounce his
son's name? Yeah, Bo.
He was talking to Obama because that's who the other person in his family he felt like he could confide in, because he needed to tell him because he wanted Obama to know where his head was at because of the importance of their job. And he was like, he's gonna have to resign as governor. But then he won't have any income, and then we're going to have to sell the house. And Obama was like, no, don't sell the house. I'll pay for it. Like, and stuff like that. And in the end, they didn't have to worry about that. Upside, I guess. I guess, other than the fact that his vice president has gone from saying that he believes Biden's sexual abuse victims to being his VP. I mean, at least it's not Trump. That's kind of where we're at.
But, you know, good news all around. I don't fear every time I look on Twitter or anything, or I see America or anything. I don't fear for their well-being, at least for a little while, until, like,
no massive
I don't know.
Riot shit either.
Yeah, not yet, anyway. That's until, like, Donald Trump Jr. or Ivanka run in 2024 or something.
Oh, God. DT Jr. for president. Oh, God.
If they're not all thrown in jail. But we will soon find out.
Well, that wraps up, I guess, the what's been happening section. Do you want to kick us off with the November 4th, 2020 episode of NXT, the fallout from Halloween Havoc?
Yeah, let's do it.
You kick things off.
Yeah, there were a few matches that were advertised going into the show, Ciampa and Dream, and the one that kicked us off, which was Dakota Kai versus Ember Moon, and they go nearly 20 minutes. Ember Moon is really, like, properly, I guess, because her first match back was a tag, and then her second match was, like, more or less an enhancement talent squash sort of deal. This was the first long form one-on-one match that Ember Moon has had, and you can really see the difference in what Ember Moon's doing in the ring. It is more, you know, ground-based tactics and everything. It's really cool to see because it's changed up her style, changed up her in-ring work. She's still got, like, her finisher and everything that she goes to, but she's added to it, which is really cool. But it's Raquel Gonzalez who gets involved and causes a distraction, which allows Dakota Kai to hit the is it go to kick? Is that what she calls it? Go to kick or something?
Something like that, yeah.
And she picks up the win. And I saw some people going like, oh, Ember Moon, she's losing already. Like, no, that's not what happened. Obviously, Dakota and Raquel, they're coming off losses from Halloween Havoc or like, losses recently. It's good that Raquel is then showing that she is still effective. She's still effective for Dakota Kai to get a big win over Ember Moon, who she has lost to in the tag match earlier. Now, with the assistance of that, it was 2-on-1. They are able to get the win. I thought it was... This doesn't do Ember Moon any little to any harm at all. It really just enhances and keeps Dakota in the mind that she is in the upper echelon of the NXT women's division.
Yeah, 100% agree. I think Ember Moon comes out this looking strong because, first of all, it's a really strong match. In terms of in-ring action, there's lots going on. At one point, I remember Moon does this dive to the outside. Big bump for Dakota into the barricade.
Yeah.
Ember goes back in for a second, moves out of the way, and everyone almost like ragdolls face first into it. Nasty bump was fine, but like she's still going all intensity. We're getting the nice technical exchange early on, then some of the heavy strikes and grapples. Like, we're getting a mixture of styles. Ember's whole thing here is like the Ember law of I'm not going to let anyone walk over me. So it kind of makes sense that she gets fucked over here because it means that we can then see her go after Raquel and Dakota a little bit more, which then it builds their feud up for Ember to eventually get the win when they want to move on with her. But as we'll talk about later on, that's not where they're going with the women's title just now anyway. So it makes sense to keep the feud going. Makes Raquel look strong, makes Raquel look like she's effective, which is good, managers should be. And also Dakota needs to get wins every so often to like be someone that you're like, oh shit, could they win this match?
Yeah.
Otherwise, if they get too many losses, you end up with that thing that Lerae had for a while, and to an extent still has, where you're like, oh, she's just going to get to the final and not win.
Yeah.
So I thought this was a really strong opener. I really enjoyed this. I actually thought this was going to be an event, which, in hindsight, I still think it should have, because our main event's not great.
But, spoilers!
Yeah. But yeah, really good to see NXT's women's division continuing to go from strength to strength. And also lovely to see NXT open with a match.
Yeah, it opened with a straight match and like 20 minutes and stuff. Yeah, it was very solid. Very solid match. We then go
worth noting, just sorry, on the topic of Raquel. I'm gonna just double check it here. WWE have trademarked some Spanish sounding name, like something bomb. It means like badass woman. I'm just gonna get up here. Ignore the typing. Apologies. Where is Chicona Bomb, which apparently means like, so Chicona means like badass woman in like Spanish and Latin culture. So it would be like the badass woman bomb. So I assume we're gonna get presumably in her match next week, she'll either, if that's what they're calling her normal power bomb, or if she whips out something new. But the fact they're trademarking moves for her is a good sign that like they have stuff planned for her, which is
absolutely
nice, because Raquel is fantastic.
Yeah, and she really shined in her match with Rhea last week. And someone else who potentially was the MVP of Halloween Havoc, Cameron Grimes. He has a match with Kushida next, and they go about 15 minutes, and like two longer wrestling matches in a row for NXT. Kind of feels like takeover scheduling, but Kushida, before we get to the way the match ends, Kushida is still going with his, he's more aggressive and stuff, he's more you know, he's more focused, and that's great, and you can really see it happening in the ring. I would maybe like to now elaborate a little bit more on that. I would maybe like to see, like, Kushida's done this, you know, he's won big matches, he's been Dream at TakeOver, he's won the Triple Threat, he's won this match. I would love to now hear from him a little bit more, because it was great that we've had this little bit of character development. We need to keep going with that. We can't just like, cool, we did it and let's move on. It's no, we need to keep elaborating and keep making, understanding why he is still this way. But we get to the finish, and after a ref bump, another referee comes out to take over, and it just so happens to be the same ref from last week's Haunted House of Horrors, as Beth Phoenix oh so eloquently says, it's the zombie referee from last week. And Grimes has zombie PTSD after last week's horror show, and it allows Kushida to lock the submission back in and pick up the win, and Cameron Grimes is terrified of zombie referee. I love that. Because it would be so easy. It would be so easy for NXT to just go, yeah, that was Halloween Havoc. It exists in its own sort of vacuum sort of thing and just kind of, yeah, move on. Yeah, there were zombies and smoke and everything and yada, yada, yada. But, like, no, Cameron Grimes is actually terrified and reacting to what happened. And he is still showing the effects of everything that's going on. And he sells it perfectly, and it gives Kushida a good win. It keeps Cameron Grimes in our consciousness. I thought a zombie referee is absolutely bonkers and brilliant at the same time.
Yeah, definitely. I think I agree with what you said about the fact that it would have been really easy to have Halloween Havoc exist as like a non-canon show, almost.
Mm.
But I think it's impressive the way that they tied in the fact that... Because last week, Grimes got eaten by zombies. Like, there's no beating around the bush with that. We saw that happen.
Mm-hmm.
So him being freaked out, having that sort of PTSD, makes perfect sense. But I was worried when it was against Kushida, because I didn't want Kushida to get kind of torn into this sort of comedy thing when he's on this really serious run. But they did it perfectly where...
Mm.
At the start, Grimes is just shite-bagging out of actually getting involved, like he's scared. And then him and Kushida have like actual back-and-forth wrestling, which is really nice. We get a ref bump where Grimes gets the visual win, Kushida gets a visual win as well, so we're seeing that these guys are actually pretty even. And it's only when the zombie ref comes in that triggers the PTSD that Kushida, like, whereas before he might not have had the killer instinct to take advantage...
Yeah.
It worked without being too hokey. Like, it's not like the ref came out still as a zombie.
Yes,
like,
exactly.
This whole zombie ref thing could very much just exist within Cameron Grimes' psyche.
Yeah, 100%.
Like, the commentary could start... If commentary hadn't said stuff like, it's the zombie ref, we could have been like, what are you on about? There was no zombies last week. And things like that. Like, I think it might be time, and it's a shame that he's in such a... See if Kyle wasn't in such a serious feud. Would be really good to see a therapist Kyle O'Reilly come back.
Oof.
Therapy with Grimes.
If only Kyle O'Reilly wasn't being used effectively.
Damn the future of this company.
We could have Kyle O'Reilly as NXT's resident psychologist. It would have been good fun.
Which, given WWE has made all of their wrestlers go to relationship therapy, you can thank Matt Riddle, Velveteen Dream, Jordan Devlin, Joe Coffey, Travis, but Jesus Christ, the list is long. You can thank them for that. But, no, it's this is nice. And logic would dictate in my head with Undisputed Era tied up with the faction that we're going to talk about shortly, and with Cross out and Grimes doing this, Kushida is surely the natural number one contender here. Like, I assume we might do a match between him and the winner of our main event, which ties into something else, but Balor versus Kushida has a lot of potential in terms of great in-ring stuff, and they've both got that little bit more to their character than they did a year ago, which will make it that bit more interesting.
I think because right now it does look like Kushida is like racking up those wins against really high profile talent to the point where you could argue, yeah, he's number one contender, or at least he'd be up there. Before they do Kushida, if they do Kushida and Balor, they are, what I said earlier, really going to need to elaborate on the Kushida thing, because a lot of people, if they haven't been watching over the last maybe 6 weeks or so, they would still think, oh, Kushida, that guy who was barely on TV and lost every so often and like didn't have a character and just didn't mean anything, other than just like his name's Kushida and we recognize that from Japan. People may still associate him with that, even though he has undergone a character shift. They need to maintain that going forward, which I hope they do. If they do go down that path of Balor and Kushida in a main event feud very soon. But also, we need to find out if Balor's coming back, which we have had a worryingly silent period of that at the moment. We then go to a What's Next for Io Shirai promo, where she basically outright challenges Rhea Ripley. She wants to face her one-on-one. They haven't had a proper one-on-one match for the title. It's always been either in the triple threat with Charlotte, or there's been they weren't champion. One of them wasn't champion at the time. They've never actually had the one-on-one Io versus Rhea for the women's title, which is a money match. So they basically leave that promo before Rhea's reply later in the show. We might as well go through it now, talk about it all at once.
Yeah, just mix it together.
Rhea basically says, duh, of course I'm going to accept that challenge. So it looks like it's going to be Rhea versus Io at some point in the near future. They did not give a date or any signalling of when this match might take place, but it'll be very fun when it does happen. Your thoughts on that being the future of the women's title program?
I really like that Io Shirai challenged her. Like, I'm happy that we're getting this match, because I was shocked when we hadn't had it one-on-one for the title. Mm. And I think we've discussed this before, where I feel like Io's already beaten everyone for the title, but she's actually only wrestled, like, four people for it.
Yeah.
But, no, seeing the champion call someone out and be like, I want to be the best, so we need to have a match, really refreshing, really refreshing.
Mm-hmm.
Rhea's turning heel. Like, the setup of this match now makes me indefinitely certain that she is. Or she's getting called up. So Io's going to challenge her. And either Rhea loses, they shake hands, and then Rhea beats the shit out of her with Raquel and Dakota, and we have a little faction which builds towards a certain show in December.
Mm-hmm.
Or Rhea loses, they shake hands, and Rhea goes away. I just don't see a situation where Rhea wins clean, for example. Or, although there's a history that Rhea won... I think Rhea won the title against Shayna on the last NXT of last year.
Yes, yes, she did.
So there is a history to play on there. But I think it would also encapsulate the year that her characters had, that if in the space of a year she goes from winning the title and being lifted up by fans on the roster for defeating Shayna to losing and having the roster come out to chase her off as she beats down the champion because she can't get the job done.
Mm-hmm.
And with the likes of Toni Storm apparently being a face, it seems, and Ember Moon being a face, we've got a little bit more room for another heel on the roster.
Yeah.
And then you can tie in her and Raquel down the line if they want to turn on Dakota, if we ever want to turn Dakota face. There's lots we can do, and I'm excited by it. She isn't the heel turn that's happened recently, or the planned heel turn that I'm most excited for. That comes in our next segment, because this next segment is really good. Really, really good.
Yes, so basically, Killian Dane and Drake Maverick come out for a match against Ever Rise. For the first time, Killian Dane, for the entrance, lets the music play. Let's not forget about that little fact. Good stuff there. It's really catchy. Holy shit, is their theme song really catchy. They have a match for about 3 minutes, but then in the middle of the match, we get basically picture-in-picture of the now-named Kings of NXT, Pete Dunne, Pat McAfee, and Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch. They come out, and then basically, before you know it, they are in there beating up... Killian Dane and Drake Maverick. They take them out. Then they do the promo. I almost went backwards. I was like, hang on, no, Killian's at the end. Then I realized, oh wait, they did a promo in the middle and Killian came back out for it. I've totally forgot about the structure of the segment for a second there. But then Pat McAfee goes through and basically does a little bit of a rundown of the history of Undisputed Era. And they have Undisputed Era's flag. You know how everyone in NXT has their own flag? Well, they got Undisputed Era's flag. And they were going to raise it, but instead they took a vote and they decided to burn it in a trash can, which they did. I don't think Pete Dunne put enough lighter fluid on it, so they didn't get the effect that they were looking for. That's one thing I noticed. And then as they start to leave, they go back to their car. That's when Killian Dane comes back to try and avenge their assault for about 10 minutes earlier. And out of she just turns into a fucking murder when Pete Dunne almost decapitates Killian Dane with a car door. And they drive off, and Pete, I did appreciate Pat McAfee saying, like, okay, that was aggressive. We may need to have a talk about that later, Pete, but yeah, that was awesome. And then they drive in, they drive off, and Killian Dane's left with blood coming out, which is quite the image for, you know, nowadays stuff, seeing that kind of stuff, like purposeful blood coming out. That's very, very different. It looked very impactful, very serious, and
They do it in black and white. That's the one thing they do.
In the replays, it's black and white, but in the moment, like on the live thing, it was in color.
Because the replays are from CCTV as well. So, yeah, this is great. This encapsulates what a good faction should be, right?
Because
you got Pat doing all the talking. He's not a wrestler. He's proven in that match that he can go against someone like Cole, but he's not a wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got Lorcan and Birch, who would never get mic time, get a little bit of mic time here because McAfee demands it. He's like, get these guys a mic. They should already have a mic. They start doing a little bit of talking, and it's good. And it's like, they're like this weird, cocky, but like rough around the edges. It's nice. They're like, yeah, we're the fucking champs. We took the offer. Of course we're going to take the offer. Why wouldn't we? And then you got Pete Dunne, who is like the fucking mentally unstable bodyguard, whereas this was obviously originally meant to be Ridge Holland, who's like the I am buff bodyguard. Pete's just like the I like having fun, I like beating people up because it brings me joy. It's like American Psycho. That's what I get from Pete.
Yeah.
And then they burn the flag, also a little bit of reference to the election, being like, shall we take a vote and things like that. And he's like, let me count, which I liked. And then they do the brawl. Killian comes out afterwards to attack him. And yeah, Pete Dunne traps his head in the car door and kicks it shut. A spot that they then imitated on Full Gear, AEW Full Gear, because Brian Cage puts Darby Allin's arm like that in the car door. And at that point, me and Ennis and the Dyer on the call, they can't do that. If they do that, his arm will break. Because like if it goes back, it's going like that, and then someone makes the save. But obviously, it's clearly inspired by it. And Pete Dunne, when Pat's like, okay, bit aggressive, bit much.
We'll talk about that later.
Pete Dunne just goes and shrugs his shoulders. It's great. But
honestly, this group, the Kings, and also they now have a name as well, the Kings of NXT,
which helps.
It's
a realistic name.
Yeah,
it's not like they take the piss out of the Undisputed Era for having like hand signals and stuff like that. They're like, we are the Kings of NXT. It sounds like something they would call themselves.
Yes,
whilst also being a catchy name. It's not the most original.
No,
but that's what I think works. It sounds like they've gone, yes, we are the Kings of NXT, and it's stuck, as opposed to, hey guys, can you please call us the Fiddlers on the Fire? it works.
It does, instead of a forced name, or like, I know some people like it, like, you know, the Hurt Business, or or what, like, it doesn't feel like a name for t-shirts, a name for merch, or anything like that.
Retribution.
It doesn't sound like that. It sounds like a name that that a group, especially with someone with the ego of Pat McAfee, would give himself and his cronies. So I do appreciate that. What I also like is that while this is really cool, you can also see, like, this is great for now, but like in the future, You're looking at Pete Dunne and you're like, Pete, how long can you realistically put up with Pat McAfee? Like, because he's incredibly irritating, like in the best way. Like, I hate him in the way I'm supposed to. But it's like, Pete, this is going to get irritating for you, mate. And at some point, he's going to go ballistic and break Pat McAfee's fingers and everything. And I look forward to that day.
They made it made sense with Pete. They were like, I didn't even have to pay Pete. Pete got screwed by the Undisputed Era. You think he's forgotten about that? And I was like, yes, makes sense. Thank you. Holland's out for at least 8 months. And in my head, I can picture the situation where the Kings of the North have done really well for 8 months. It's really over. Holland comes back and is paid by Pat to take out Pete because Pete's getting a bit too big for his boots. You know, maybe at this point, Pete's North American title and has been challenging for others. And Pete's forgetting that Pat's the reason he gets there. And then you can do Holland versus Pete as well, which elevates Holland.
Mm-hmm.
But this could be the thing. Lorcan and Birch are a tag team. They're always going to be stuck at that level. But this could elevate Pete Dunne to world champion.
Yeah.
And that's great because we love Pete Dunne. Can we talk about segment of the night now, please?
Yes, we love the Garganos. We are a Gargano, like, simp podcast at this point because we love them so much. We didn't see Candice LeRae during the At Home with the Garganos segment, but we did see her later on. Is that one segment of the night? I'm tossing
it's,
up, but this close. One's fun.
It's close.
This one's fun. Gargano starts, saying that he loves wheels, like always loved wheels. You know, he's now North American champion because of the spin the wheel, make a deal thing. We then see he's playing the game of life. He's spinning the wheel in it,
yeah.
And he gets a call from Ghostface, who helped him win the title last week. And
can we just talk about the fact that it's Ghostface from the shit Scream film? As a horror aficionado, the Scream films, at least Scream 1 and 2, game changers. And at a certain point, they decided the way the Ghostface works, right, is rather than having like the anonymous mystery voice, that he had a voice changer that can make him sound like anyone else in the world. And it's that Ghostface that they use. They're using the shit Ghostface, which I don't know why, but I just think works perfectly for the Garganos. Because
weirdly
in my
does.
Head, the Garganos would like the shit Scream film.
But yeah, so he gets a call from Ghostface and says, like, I am in your house. And and Gargano's like, yeah, I know, you're across the table from me. We're playing the game of life. And then they just do it, like, and then they stop, like, they keep talking on the phone. Why are we talking on the phone? He says he's going to defend the North American title next week, and for the first time, successfully defend a singles title in NXT, because he hasn't done it. Very much the Sasha Banks of NXT.
Sasha Banks, yeah.
And he then does a little wee dance with the North American title. What was it? I've got a tweet here, like, Johnny wins, wheels love Johnny, and Johnny wins. Something like that.
Yeah.
And he's dancing.
Holding the belt above his head and, like,
grinding.
As he spins the wheel of life, and he gets, like, a 9, and then goes through, spins it and gets a 3.
And
he's like, yeah, wheels still love you. Wheels love Johnny, and Johnny wins. It's stupid as fuck, but it works so well.
Gargano has turned into something, like, because he used to be, you know, the plucky underdog babyface Gargano. Then he was like evil, like being scorned by Ciampa Gargano, and now he is so deluded and just, and he's crazy, but he's also funny, but he's effective in this is one of my favorite character developments for Johnny Gargano.
We mentioned him at the start of the podcast, and I'm gonna mention him here again. Johnny's turned into Chris Jericho.
Little bit.
Yeah, he's gone from like the underdog that was good on the mic and was talking down to everyone to the sort of bastard heel that aligned with the person that he didn't like. And they were at the sort of demo god Le Champion Johnny Gargano, who, bear in mind that this is our house, so obviously we assume here that because I like to think the Garganos respect social distancing and stuff, that's probably Candice playing the role of Ghostface there for the segment. That they just had to go out and buy the game of life, or just had it because they like board games, because they played board games together. Like,
I reckon they
couple.
Had it. I reckon they
yeah.
had it.
And then they've got a miniature spin the wheel in the background. They just have a cupboard in their house called For NXT.
Mm-hmm. And then again,
so
in
good.
Canon, they're in the In Your House as well, because I will always maintain that because we saw Johnny Gargano make his entrance at In Your House from his living room to the ring, it's the In Your House that they live in. He was the kid that won it back in 1995.
Also worth pointing out, and I'm fairly certain I've called this correctly, next week Johnny is going to defend against a worthy challenger that is going to be someone thin like Anthony Gray.
Or Leon Ruff or something.
I hope it's Big Leon. But yeah, it's going to be someone that he will squash, and it's like, haha, I've defended my title, and then Bronson Reed's coming out.
Yeah, something like
Because Bronson Reed said he's going to challenge the next person, and in terms of wins and losses recently, I mean, he did beat Austin Theory twice in the same time, so he probably is the number one contender for that title. Mm-hmm. And Johnny and Bronson could make some good stuff happen in ring. And I think Bronson's funny enough to play off of the funny things.
Yeah.
Bronson did a tweet, I swear it was about Trump, but I can't... No, it was about Jericho. When Jericho tweeted, fucking fourth mention for him, he's everywhere. When Jericho tweeted, I'm not political, but is it not a bit strange that we've had to wait more than a day to find out the president? And Bronson just tweeted it going, I'm not political, and then like laughing his head off. Oh, big man like Bronson.
Love him. Proud from, Adelaide from boy.
From one Aussie to another, we go to Tony Storm versus Shotzi Blackheart.
Yes, now, so this was different. I thought when this match happened, I thought I had missed a segment because Tony comes out. Also, they've changed her entrance, Tony, or they've changed the camera angles on her entrance. They got rid of Buttshot because, like, Twitter got gross. But we then... I think there's probably...
Pat Tywin.
He is seen. But the thing is, after Tony's entrance, Shotzi comes out and she's like storming out. She's not in her tank as usual. She's storming out and she looks pissed at Tony Storm. And originally, I'm thinking like, have I missed a segment here? Did they not air a segment? Yeah,
Was there something here? On Twitter? Or...
Yeah. But then...
Because it's worth noting that the reason this match is happening is because... Triple H was so, or William Regal was so thrilled with how good a job Shotzi did at hosting Halloween Havoc that she got a challenge anyone on the roster of her choice. I assume that excluded title matches, because, you know, otherwise, why didn't you choose Shotzi? But she said she wanted to challenge her against Tony. It's a match she's been looking forward to, and that's why the match is happening. And it was all very friendly, because we get a small segment early in the night where Tony's like, you did a fantastic job, and I get why you challenged me, but I'm going to have to beat you.
That was not an Australian accent at all.
Not in this. I focused so much on the female that I forgot what I was doing and just went redneck.
Hurtful.
But yeah, she comes out kicking and screaming, and like to be fair, like green haired people on Twitter. And I think at one point she screams, "I know you did it," and at this point I'm like, "Not the tank, not the tank, not the tank." Not the tank, not the tank. And then commentary talk about the fact she might not be in the right mental state because her tank's gone missing.
Yeah.
And at this point in my head, I'm like, Robert Stone's finally going to be doing something. because as well, for your birthday, you got a topless Robert Stone inducting you into the Robert Stone brand.
Of course, I forgot. Yes, you did get me a Robert Stone cameo, which was lovely. And
He sent that of his own fruition. That's not a cameo. He's just our mate.
He is just our mate.
I bought his merch.
You did. So yes, I'm now part of the Robert Stone brand. So it is Aaliyah and myself. I'm in the TikTok division, according to Robert Stone. But also, he thinks I'm 44. So thank you for that. he was also shirtless.
I'd like to say that that was a typo or something. I was just like, nah, let's not make this too nice. Also, we put from William Ennis Dye, who was it? And Scott Morrison. And the hope that one, he would read out our names as well. And also, just your shitty Prime Minister would give you a fucking... a cameo. And he didn't read who they're from.
Devastating. But he did put the effort in. We do love Robert Stone on this podcast.
Yes. This match disappointed, though, right? I'm not alone here.
Yeah, so there was... So when... I guess the upside of... Because unfortunately there was a little bit of a botch when Blackheart goes for like a bit of a springboard and she kind of misses and she falls over and Tony has to take advantage. Because of the way her entrance was, in that she was so manic and angry and everything, it did kind of feel realistic that she would make an error of her own volition. So I guess, like, even though that was not intended, if you look at it in a certain way, you're like, oh no, that makes sense that she would stuff up because she's so emotionally out of sort, out of whack at that point. But they do a couple of back and forths. There was a an attempt at a tornado DDT to the outside that, like, I could see what they were going for. It just unfortunately did not.
Oh, that was nasty.
Yeah,
that was a nasty bump.
Yeah, I could see what they were going for. I wish they could have pulled it off a little bit better. Who knows? They might have another shot at Shotzi. Might give it another go with someone else. But like, the match wasn't awful. But it was, I think we maybe expected a little bit more when it was revealed Toni Storm versus Shotzi Blackheart.
Yeah, that's the thing. I'm starting to think, and I think some people maybe thought this a little bit longer. So I think Toni's not very good, or is definitely not as good as she was, because we saw, obviously, myself and Di kind of went to every show that we could over the British Indies for like last 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And when she was there, she would have great matches. And at one point, she was definitely probably the best women's wrestler, mainstream women's wrestler on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
She then, through, you know, issues and whatever, has been off and on, went to NXT UK for a bit, which is kind of career stagnator. And then has been
Rhea Ripley.
Or Ridge Holland. But, yeah. Like, last week she did the, or the week before, rather, she did the Storm Zero on Aaliyah. And it was, like, very close to someone's head getting taken off.
Uh-huh.
And it was really easy to blame Aaliyah, because she's the less renowned performer.
Mm-hmm.
But I've watched it back after this match, and Toni just doesn't get enough oomph on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't look like Aaliyah's, like, ragdoller. You can see Aaliyah making the attempt to roll.
Yeah.
And then the Shotzi botch here. Shotzi's another one who, we've seen it a few times where, because her style is the same as sort of Lita or Kaylee Ray, and it's that very, like, WWE would call it daredevil style.
Yeah.
Where it's like, she likes to go reckless and high intensity, that you are prone to more errors than, like, a very slow, methodical match.
Yeah.
And that's something she does need to work on, and I'm sure she would admit that. But also, that is two botches in Toni Storm's first two matches, and it's hard not to see a pattern forming there. And also just, she's not doing a lot that she's not been doing for the last 3 years.
Mm.
And I mean, hopefully she goes into a program or some, like, serious matches. But, like, this was fine. And, like, it was saved at the end with what happened.
Yeah, I think with Toni, I've seen a few people who are, like, not completely sold on Toni. It's not like that they don't like her or she's got no hope or anything like that. She has got a natural charisma. Not so much when she talks, but, like, she does have, like, a natural charisma about her. So she is likable in a sense, but some people are gravitating towards her. So, again, it might be just comes down to time, because she was off for so long. She's only had a couple of matches, and she's also wrestling in front of almost no one, because there is a small crowd there, very small, but she's wrestling in, like, a screen. So it's a very different environment for her, I guess, as well. Like, so I guess we gotta let her get back into the groove of it, and then if we're still talking about this problem in a couple of months' time, then there's a problem. But I'm willing to give Toni a little bit more time to sort herself out. The match looks like it. Shotzi looks like she has it in hand. When Candice LeRae comes on the Tron, she gets Shotzi's attention, shows that she has found. She found Shotzi's tank. Mm-hmm.
Found it.
And then in that moment, Toni comes in, rolls Shotzi up, and Toni gets the win. And then Candice gets in the car that comes up to her. She tries to stop the car as it comes towards her, and then as she gets into the car, there's Ghostface in the back seat of it. And
yes.
Another continuation, it's Ghostface really helping the Garganos here. It's not just a Johnny Gargano thing. And with the huge, almost monster truck, not quite the same height or anything, but a huge ass truck, they run over and destroy Shotzi's tank. And Shotzi is absolutely inconsolable. She is in tears.
I love that commentary make it slightly more sensible that she's upset over this. Because in reality, it's a toy tank. Or like a custom-made toy tank, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she's like proper, like, she's like,
hyperventilating.
Her kids just died in ring. Yeah. reacting like a green-haired person on Twitter. But she's like proper going at it. Tony's kind of stood in the corner because Tony rolls her up to take advantage.
Yeah.
And then the truck gets rolled over, or the tank does. And Tony's just kind of stood in the corner like, I should console you. And I almost thought that Tony was going to fucking deck her. And it was going to be the reveal that Tony was with the Garganos. And I was like, cool, I guess. But no, she's just there to kind of be like, okay. And commentary say, you have to remember, folks, it was her late uncle or relative of some sort, maybe father, that got her that tank as a reminder of his time in the military and as their hobby together. Mm-hmm. And that made it make sense that she was just upset over it. Like, all of a sudden, it felt more personal than just the nice little novelty of Candace ripping it over.
Mm-hmm.
Two positives to come out of this. One, I think for the future trajectory of Candace, or for Shotzi, sorry, they needed to get rid of the tank.
Well, that's the thing. I don't think the tank's gone for good. I think the tank will come back.
See, I think it is, but my headphones have died, so you keep speaking for now while I plug them in charge.
Totally noted. I'll ad-lib for a bit. So I think the tank is going to return and might be bigger and better and might have like Candace's like face with a big mark on it or something like that. But I think if they do that, that's great. But then they to also allow Shotzi to grow outside the tank, that would be cool too. But I would like to see the tank continue because I just see a lot more merch possibilities with the tank still involved. So I think I think the tank will come back. It was going to be like a trademark kind of thing. Same way that Eddie had the low rider, Shotzi's going to have the tank. So, and it does set her apart. It totally sets her apart.
Yeah, 100%.
Also, I really liked the explanation from and the motivation from Candace. Like, it's so easy to get the motivation when she outright says, you took the NXT women's title away from me, you took my dream away from you, now we're even. And it's like the heel is such a prick. Candace is such a prick, but at the same time you can kind of see why she did it as well. It's an awful thing to do, but she, you get why she was pissed and she went to a drastic measure to do it. Oh, a justified heel. Shotzi had nothing to do with the match and she got involved and cost Candace the win. So she took out the tank. Oh, justified heels are the best heels. So good.
Yeah, it's that logical step up. It's not like, oh, you cost me a title, I've burnt down your actual house that you live in.
Yes.
To be fair, it's also probably not the piece of Grand Theft Auto that Shotzi's most upset about from this year as well. Because her legit car got stolen like 2 months ago. Wonder if Candace is behind that.
But, Ghostface.
Yeah. But yeah, the slow reveal of who's Ghostface will obviously probably go until Indy is allowed to be back.
Yeah.
So next week, I think maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe if it is Theory as well. You know, who knows. But no, it was really nice. Good storytelling. So far in this show, it's worth noting, we opened with a women's match. We've had Shotzi and Tony tying in with that Candace story.
Yep.
We've had Io Shirai and Rhea Ripley tying in.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not it for little women's stories.
No.
But we do have the single worst segment in the history of NXT, and it should definitely burn in a fire. It should go the fuck away, and we're not going to talk about it a lot. But we get the live Thatcher Thang class with Timothy Thatcher. Yes, that's right. It's been 6 months, and we are still doing the exact same fucking shit. He locks someone in a submission and doesn't let go. He stiffs them. Someone comes out to save them. Only thing worth noting from this is the perfect person that saves them is Austin Gray, the former Anthony Green of Evolve.
Yeah.
Which means that we're starting to build someone new from this.
Mm-hmm.
That's nice. Do you have anything to save the segment, Michael, or can we just move on?
I appreciate that we're getting a new character in this Austin Gray, who I honestly, I never followed Evolve, so I don't know how good this guy is or not. I assume he's fine. I assume he's fine, but I like that we're being introduced to a new character. So at least if by the end of it, Austin Gray becomes a character on TV, this entire Thatcher Thatch Can thing has not been a complete waste of time. We've got a new character out of it, but Timothy Thatcher is just still doing the same thing over and over again, so we can just move on. We move on to, like, okay, here's the thing. If if all the stuff that's happening in the women's division right now in NXT, Rhea Ripley and Io, Candice and Shotzi and all this stuff wasn't going on, I don't know what's going on with Xia Li, but I'm really into it. Like, this would be my favorite thing if the NXT women's division wasn't so amazing. Put it this way, if this was the story that AEW were doing with their women's division, this would be the best story that they would have. It would also be the only story that they have. So,
hey, Nyla Rose and Vicky Guerrero had a falling out.
Oh, did they? It would be nice to have seen it on Dynamite leading up to it. And Tony Khan has literally said that exact thing. So maybe...
I forgot that most of our audience don't watch Dark. Because it's called Dark. Like, oh. Anyway.
Yeah.
So Xia Li's being interviewed. And she's being asked about, like, the letters she's receiving. She confirms they are from her family.
Yes.
Which does slightly confirm her fear that this is going to go down an ever so slightly, like, racist route of, like, your grades aren't good enough. Like, you aren't winning enough. We're going to bring you home to run the restaurant. Like, that sort of horribly racist thing. She doesn't.
I was gonna say, you don't think when Regal hands her another letter written in Chinese, that's just not, like, saying, like, what are you ordering this week?
But she says she's not gonna say what is it. But she needs to turn her fortunes around. I'm surprised NXT didn't go. She needs to turn her fortune cookies around with the way this feud.
Jesus.
But. It's actually, in terms of the promo, it's very well delivered, especially when you consider that this isn't her first language. She's talking about needing to get the win. And then, and this is going to tie into my overlapping point of this thing, which is I am envious of Xia Li's balls.
Mm-hmm.
Because she just goes, I need Raquel Gonzalez dishonored me.
Mm-hmm.
I want a match against her next week, William.
Yeah.
To Regal. And he goes, are you sure? Basically, like, no, you don't want to do that, sweetie. She'll fucking kill you.
It's a bad idea.
Like, I have no choice. She dishonored me and she dishonored my family. And I'm like, it's very basic, any wrestler from Asia, the sort of, like, family disrespect.
Mm-hmm.
But it is also a cultural truth that, like, there is a focus on honor and family respect within those countries. So it's fine. And also, she's just challenged one of the most destructive women on the roster. Add on to that the fact that she took an indie booking without telling WWE and just assumed it would be fine.
Yeah.
And third, the fact she went up to Triple H. The reason this storyline is happening is she went up to Triple H and went, I want a push.
Yeah, she's been there for a few years and nothing has happened yet. She's like, I want a push.
Yeah, she was like, you need to give me a little bit of a push. And Triple H went, okay, well, we'll see what we can do. Fucking the bollocks on Xia Li. The fucking... Even if it was just like, hey, Triple H, I won't be at tapings on Wednesday, by the way. I took a charity MMA match. You did what? You can't do that. But we're independent contractors.
Oh,
the fucking balls on that woman.
Xia Li is like, she's closing in on the boss of NXT at this point, because she's just doing whatever the fuck she wants, and I'm here for it. So, I like, Xia Li continues the most, I would say, one of the most intriguing characters on the show, in the sense that she's growing, she's got character, but we're not sure what's going on, and I do enjoy that. And it's every, she, even though she's on pretty much every single week, it's not an Austin Theory kind of thing, where most of the time when she's on every week, it's a quick 30-second thing, you know, every other episode, and then the other episode she's wrestling. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to more Xia Li developments. We can't remember what was scared. I think they started to do the graphics of what's advertised for next week, in which Oni Lorcan and Danny Burch are giving Breezango their rematch. So we've got an NXT tag title match. And then we've also got Raquel and Xia, as we just saw. And then Johnny Gargano is also defending the NXT North American title next week. But it's time for the main event. Tommaso Ciampa versus the Velveteen Dream. They wrestle for 15 minutes. It was on my TV screen. I barely paid attention looking at my notes. Ciampa won. And I have nothing to say to this because these two characters are cold as ice.
Yeah, this is a main event that has happened, and it's good that Ciampa won.
Yeah.
I see, it's difficult for me because with doing the live results for it, I need to pay a certain level of attention to things so that I can like actually add the analysis and take the notes of what happened and shove live tweets out.
Yeah.
What I tend to do is if something's shit, right? Take for example, because Deadpod, I can say whatever the fuck I want.
Yeah, go for it.
Lana on Raw. Lana couldn't pleasantly fuck off. She's trying, good for her. I have no issues with the person behind Lana trying and doing that. I don't resent her for being on TV. She just shouldn't. Can't say that on ITR Twitter because, you know, they do interviews with people like Miro and Miro follow them and, like, don't want to fucking insult someone's wife. Like, that's rude.
Yeah.
I'm not insulting anyone other than the character of Lana and the way it's being booked. Different thing. So I had to pay a certain amount of attention to this match, and even then, I just wrote the most generic stuff about it because, honestly, there's fuck all to this.
Yeah.
And it's not even Ciampa's fault. Ciampa came out looking really cool with a new mask.
Mm-hmm.
At one point, towards the end, Ciampa does the knee strike, does a schoolboy roll up, sees that Dream's feet are too close to the rope to just take the pin, so just hooks him up into the Willow's Bell. That was lovely. That was really good wrestling. Mm-hmm. Like that, and it made sense, and it was really smooth. And I don't even know if that was planned or if maybe the roll up was just misplaced.
Mm-hmm.
But that was great. I don't care about Dream though. I actually care about Ciampa to an extent. Like since this heel character has come back, he's kind of dipped a bit because he's been stuck with Dream for a while. But I assume in the coming weeks we're probably going to get him versus Kushida for the number one contendership, and it's going to be great. And that'll be a nice, like, hard fought match, and I can see them doing interesting things with what is basically Tommaso Ciampa being the gatekeeper.
Mm-hmm.
This should write Dream off for a while. Like, sure, they clearly realised people were getting tired with Theory, right?
Yeah.
Because even if he's coming back to, like, re-debut a different style of character, or even if it's related to the off-screen incidents, the same applies to Dream. And Dream's not a draw.
Not like, anymore.
Not anymore, no. So, I just... This shouldn't have main evented.
No, this should open. Like, admittedly, these two have star power, if you like to, you know, quote-unquote star power, but this match... This story had no business main eventing. The segment that should have closed the show is a toss up between the Kings of NXT decapitating Killian Dane or Candice LeRae running over Shotzi's tank and they go off the air of Shotzi being consoled by Toni Storm and she's crying.
Killian Dane shouldn't be on TV next week. Just on the note of that.
Oh, 100% no. Absolutely not.
They could do Drake Maverick calling out Pete Dunne.
Yes.
And we can do Drake Maverick versus Pete Dunne, which one is really nice because it's two... I think Maverick's from Birmingham as well.
Something like that, yeah.
Two guys from the same scene hooking up. Very clear underdog. Like, Maverick will get his ass kicked.
100%.
But it helps build Maverick as a babyface because Pete Dunne's such a good heel.
Mm-hmm.
But also the closing shot of a prone, lifeless, bleeding out Killian Dane is great cliffhanger television.
Mm-hmm.
This didn't end on a high of like the match being really good or a high of yes, Ciampa won or damn, Ciampa won. Or what is he gonna get his ass kicked? This ended.
Yeah, it just closed the show.
That's just what it did.
It didn't. It didn't crescendo. It just. Oh, it's over. Okay. Like, nothing.
A lot of WWE programming recently has really struggled from just ending.
Yeah.
And even when they try to do something clever, like I think back to Raw before Hell in a Cell, where they had Drew lock himself inside the cage with Randy, and then it cut. That was it.
Yes, I remember saying that.
That's not what I mean by leave it on a cliffhanger.
Yeah.
What I mean is, like, if you end it on Dane being attacked, right, and him being left lifeless, I'm not sat wondering what happened next, because you could end it on them driving off and then cut to that shot. But it's a cinematic end. It would be the end of a TV show episode.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes wrestling forgets that it's a TV show.
Yeah.
You should make me want to watch for the stories next week as well as for the matches. And sometimes NXT is relying a bit too much at the moment on oh, this match next week will be really good.
Yeah, exactly. That's why when they did that, were like when Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch, they won the tag titles and they closed the show because they turned heel and aligned themselves with Pat McAfee. That was a great cliffhanger because they just turned heels as new champions. Pat McAfee's back. Awesome, awesome exactly. Cliffhanger to finish the show on. This is just a match happened, a guy won. That was it. At least I will say NXT aren't doing the Monday Night Raw thing that they do where WWE give you the illusion that something's happening when nothing's happening when they go to an ad break.
Yes.
So when they do the thing like that, when the AJ Styles big tall bodyguard catches Jeff Hardy and they go to the break of him still holding Jeff Hardy, or like a segment happens and then the entrance music of an unrelated character comes out and they go, "What's going on here?" Go to an ad break. Oh, it's just another match starting. Nothing actually happened.
Yeah.
Like, the illusion.
You know, he's the third tallest wrestler, just on the note of the associate, Jordan Omagobahan, is the third tallest wrestler in WWE history.
Yes, like, yes.
He's taller than Andre the Giant.
Mm-hmm.
And because he stood beside AJ, who is, as Vince would like to tell us, a small guy, he looked fucking massive.
Yeah.
Also, just on the note of like sort of things to come in NXT, Cross soon, you think? Feels like about the normal time for a, because it was just a small shoulder tear, right?
Well, yeah, I think it was a similar situation of what happened when Balor won the Universal title, in that he, like, you know, like if you get in, like he got injured in August and Balor was back by February or March. Oh no, Balor didn't come back after the shoulder thing until.
The issue with Balor's is because of the way he did it. I think he, like, tore several things.
Oh right.
Because it was, Balor's was always mental to think, given how much Seth got blamed. Balor's was entirely his fault.
Yeah.
He fucking put his hand out.
Yeah.
I'm just googling it here, see if anyone's put anything out recently. See, it's all going to be Cross update from Scarlett Bordeaux, which is going to be the photo of him working out in a gym on holiday.
Mm-hmm.
I
think what would be nice if
separated shoulders typically take between 2 to 3 months.
Okay, so it's probably not far off. So whether they start sending Scarlett out to be ominous for a little while in the lead up to Cross coming back, but it feels like. Like, Ciampa, like, I don't want, like, because, like, the whole Ciampa thing, he got squashed and then we didn't see him for months afterwards. Maybe they do that, but, like, also, Balor's not around, and Cross is the rightful NXT champion, and it's just, it's hard, because they had so much planned for Cross, and then he, unfortunately, just bad injury at the wrong time. I'm not sure where Karrion Kross fits in NXT at the moment, even though he's only been gone for a few
Johnny
months.
Against Johnny Gargano, maybe?
But then it feels like he's gone down a notch because he's gone to the North American title scene.
I think you could be, because the thing is, he would be like, well, the fan mindset would be, well, why aren't you just going straight after Balor? I think you could have him do something where Johnny's doing these squash matches or whatever, you know, rightful challengers and all of that. Then he's got Ghostface sticking with him and he's like, oh, we're the scariest team in the world, whatever. Then Scarlett comes out or something like that. And then you do something and Cross says the reason that he's taking care of the North American title first is he wants to take care of the imposter and give Balor time to recover, because when he beats Balor, he wants the demon to be at 100%. And that plants a seed for the tease of, because you can make Cross versus Balor easily a 4-month program from January that ends at Mania where Cross defeats the demon.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like a fucking, it also gives Cross a bit of time to get the people who are maybe doubting his actual wrestling ability over. And also Cross wrestling Gargano is a much person to come back into to show like wrestling style. And also I just want to see Gargano segments of them like sitting in their house in the corner with the light off, terrified that Karrion Kross is coming for them. Like someone knocks at the door and they creak open and they see like someone that they think Scarlett, and it's actually just someone being like, my car broke down outside.
Like a pizza like you ordered, like that kind of thing. Or they could,
and then they open the pizza and it's an hourglass. Oh.
Or maybe they do something similar to when they did the Triple H Undertaker thing for WrestleMania, where Finn Balor returns, and then before he even gets to speak, Karrion Kross's music starts, and they both return on the same episode together. Maybe they hold off and wait for them both to be ready at the same time, and then boom, there's your NXT title thing going on. There are options. Like, personally, I think I might hold off on Karrion Kross until Finn is ready to go, and then you just bring them both back at the same time, and then, wow, lots happening all in one episode, that kind of thing. But that's just my idea. They might do that. They might do something completely different. That's the fun of it. And NXT, we don't quite know where it's going to go, but we have a relative confidence that whatever they do is going to be some level of good. But that's fine. Overall, this episode of NXT was a solid. It was pretty solid. Keeps stories moving along. Again, really love the Kings of NXT stuff, the Candice LeRae and Shotzi stuff. Johnny is obnoxious. Love her. And Dakota and Raquel still looking good. Zaya's thing's moving along. It's all decent stuff. So a solid story building episode for NXT.
Exactly, and I think we have faith that they will make it work.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they've got so many great stories going on at the moment where I still have no idea where the Saya thing's going, and part of me, if this was main roster, I would just be convinced it's going to be shit. And I've got a little bit of me that's like, oh god, this could go somewhere bad. But also, I have faith that unless this is NXT, in fact, punishing Zaya for everything, and it's just going to be her getting beat and beat and beat, then I have faith and I'm interested to see where it goes. Tag titles are interesting again, or at least in an interesting program.
Yeah.
And we're probably building towards... So, if we assume that... And I think we covered this in the last one. Killian and Maverick are now heavily built into this feud.
Yeah.
But you'd assume War Games is Undisputed Era versus the Kings of NXT.
That's if War Games is happening, because I've seen conflicting things on whether they actually are going to do War Games. If they actually have the room in that building for two rings and a cage.
Oh, shit. Yeah, because they have to. Yeah, that's a great point. I didn't even think about the fact that it would have to be from there. Yeah.
So
if they don't do War Games... Oh my god, that'd be great.
We might be one of the only podcasts out there that are saying, man, if they don't do War Games, it could save the feud.
Because can you imagine, right? So the show's NXT TakeOver
32.
Revenge.
Yeah.
Whatever, right? The show opens with Adam Cole versus Pete Dunne. The stipulation is there will be that Killian Dane and Maverick are facing for the titles later on.
Mm-hmm.
Adam Cole is wrestling Pete Dunne. If Adam Cole defeats Pete Dunne and they win the tag titles, Adam Cole gets Pat McAfee one-on-one later in the night.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you maybe open with a tag match and Killian and Maverick win by DQ.
Yeah.
So the title doesn't change hands. And then Adam Cole is wrestling Pete Dunne. And, you know, that's the main event. And if he wins, he gets his hand on it. I think they used to do that with Cornette a lot.
Yeah, where they put him in the shark cage or whatever.
Yeah. Hell, bring the shark cage back.
Fuck it. Why not?
They put fucking Paul Ellering or something up there, right? And then Adam Cole loses because you don't give it away straight away. And also, that's a big win for Pete.
Mm-hmm.
And then he just beats the fuck out of Pat for a little bit and gets beat down. And that way you can still do like actual matches that focus on non-force storytelling.
Yeah.
God, if they're not doing War Games, that's fantastic.
Oh, it's honestly the best news if they aren't. Boy, do we not like War Games here.
Right, well, that wraps up another week of NXT.
Yes.
We've got a couple of days to go before this week's episode, so I'm looking forward to that. Michael, is there anything you would like to plug in particular before we What happened on the show? We'll get played out by...
Yeah, who are we going to get played out by?
Pete Dunne. Pete Dunne killed the man. Played out by Pete Dunne.
Pete Dunne did kill a man. So yes, we should...
There's
we
a title. Pete Dunne kills a man. NXT Roundtable 28.
Pete Dunne killed a man. Yeah, we'll do that. You can follow me at Michael Farah on Instagram, at MichaelFarah92 on Twitter, and on TikTok. Help me get to 25,000 followers. That would be nice. I'm nearly there. That's it on my end. I nearly called you Innes. I do apologise. It's one of the most hurtful things I've ever said. Liam.
I'm off to top myself.
Liam, what else would you like to plug?
Just follow me on Twitter at Liam A. Stewart. Follow me on Instagram at Liam ALX Stewart. You can follow the brand at Develop Podcast. We are on the road to trying to get to 5k downloads for the year by the end of the year. That would be very nice. We're about 3.5, so you know, if you could double our output for the last 2 months, we'd really appreciate that. So share with your friends, let us know if there's anything you would like to see us discuss. And also tweet at Innes_McVeigh and call him a flaky cunt.
Yes.
Thank you very much for listening. I've been Liam Stewart. He's been Mike Farrow. This has been the Developmental Podcast. And as always, please remember to be good people.